brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live. We're now into the second hour. We're going to simulcast the second, third, and fourth hour live at PrisonPlanet.tv for PrisonPlanet.tv members. I want to say hi to all the great radio listeners out there. Well, for the full hour, Lies the Government Told You, Myth, Power, and Deception in American History, best-selling author Judge Andrew P. Napolitano, forward by Ron Paul. It's hardcover, a thick book, but a great quick read on a host of key issues. He really tells it like it is. He is the most hardcore constitutionalist who never wavers, who is on mainstream television in the United States. He's the best, better than Lou Dobbs, better than anybody out there. And we like Lou Dobbs here. We wish he was back on television. And so we're honored to have him with us to talk about the government takeover of healthcare, this other draconian legislation introduced by McCain to arrest U.S. citizens and, quote, interrogate them under military control. We're going to go over that. We're going to get into stories out of New Jersey, his home state. Cops in New Jersey town given keys to homes as part of your safety. We have all these Brinks commercials running where it shows a thug busting into a woman's house and she calls 911. How about she shoots him? So we'll talk about the fight between freedom and liberty and the collectivists and the tyrants that are trying to take over our society. And Rush Limbaugh is talking about Obama might try to suspend elections. I mean, they're going to lose, so the only way they could try to get away with this is to suspend elections. They're trying to demonize the Tea Parties, the Patriots. No doubt they're staging many of these brick-through-the-window events. Democrats have been caught doing this before. There is a lot of anger out there. Violence is not the answer. Judge Napolitano, great to have you here with us.
Alex, it's a pleasure. What a fabulous intro, man. I'm riveted listening to you.
Well, we're riveted having you here. Okay, I could bring up a lot of subjects, but what's important to you right now? What's number one on your front burner?
The loss of freedom at the hands of the government, which happens with every tick of the clock. I kiddingly say in the beginning of that book, which you were very kind to mention, Alex, that when I told friends I was writing a book about the government and lies and that it was 4,000 pages long, everybody laughed and said, were you able to get all the lies in the 4,000 pages? Of course, the publisher made me stop at 300 pages, but it shows you the perception that the public has is that the government does lie to us, has been lying to us, and we accept these lies and are willing to laugh about it, even though every one of those lies I talk about in the book, and even many that you just mentioned in the introduction, destroys our liberty, destroys our freedom by inducing us to make political decisions on erroneous information that the government claims is true. And when we give up this liberty and lose this property, we don't get it back.
Absolutely. When we come back, I want to get into the health care bill. I want to talk about what's next for these guys, the blanket amnesty, the national worker ID for citizens that illegals are exempt from. I've read the bill. It's the same thing in this bill, the health care bill. It talks about how we have to have an electronic medical ID card, but it says illegals are, again, exempt from that.
No surprise that they would do something like that in order, A, to control us, B, to know where we are and what we're doing, and C, to create a permanent underclass fully dependent upon them. The next thing you know is that they'll allow those folks to vote, and you know which way they'll vote, in favor of the party or the group or the candidate that gives them as big a piece of the pie to which we contribute at the point of a gun.
Judge Andrew Napolitano, the new book, Lies the Government Told You, in hardcover, hitting bookstores everywhere. Get it at Amazon.com. We'll tell you about Judge Napolitano's websites as well. We're about to go to break. Long segment coming up, and we will go through the health care bill. We will talk about the Republican Party. Is there any avenue there to try to repeal all this? We'll talk about the constitutionality with our constitutional law expert, Judge Napolitano. I'm Alex Jones. The websites are Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and PrisonPlanet.tv. And don't forget, we also have Jesse Ventura's new book at Infowars.com. You can get it there. American Conspiracies, already number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. We'll be right back.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
We're back for the rest of the hour. Judge Andrew Napolitano is our guest. The new book, Lies the Government Told You, Myth, Power, and Deception in American History. Judge, I get up here every day and rant and rave and actually cover the laws, the subsections, the bills. I give people chapter and verse, and still some call in and say, are you really telling the truth? Here's page 65 of the signed bill, and it's in section BI, eligibility for health plan, and this is the actual section of the bill, and it says, may allow for the use of a machine-readable identification card. And they have another bill where they make citizens have a national ID card to have a job, but the illegals are exempt. And you have a, 8% approval rating for Reid, 10% for Pelosi, 11% for Congress. They know that 80% of the public is against this health care takeover. We know the insurance companies wrote it. It's actually a scam. The establishment knows what they're doing is unconstitutional and lawless. But they're going ahead with it, and that's why Rush Limbaugh, and I agree with him, I'm glad he's really coming out now and telling it like it is,
right,
said that they may suspend elections because he says there's no way they can win and that it appears they're putting in a police state control grid. But as you know, this was all set up in the last 20, 30 years in this nation. It's bipartisan. Judge Napolitano, what is the state of our union?
Well, the state of our union is that it is a bipartisan movement toward a police state. I mean, we don't have two parties in this country, Alex, even though most people think we do. Your listeners know that we have one party, the big government party. There's a Republican wing that likes war and deficits and assaults our civil liberties. There's a Democratic wing that likes welfare and taxes and assaults our commercial liberties. But they basically will feed each other because they're not interested in freedom. They don't believe in fidelity to the Constitution. They're just interested in power. I mean, on my radio show last month, I asked the number three ranking Democrat in the House of Representatives, Congressman Jim Clyburn, Congressman, where in the Constitution is the government authorized to regulate health care? And he said to me, Judge, most of what we do down here, referring to Washington, is not authorized by the Constitution. Where in the Constitution is it prohibited that we regulate health care? The very fact that he would ask that question shows a tremendous 180-degree misunderstanding of the federal government. The Congress is not a general legislature. It doesn't exist in order to right every wrong. It exists only to exercise power in 17 unique, discrete, specific, well-defined, set-out areas in a piece of paper called the Constitution, to which he took an oath to uphold. At least he was candid enough to acknowledge they're not upholding it. But what is to become of us, Alex, if the government decides the extent of its own powers, if the government freely admits it violates its oath to uphold the Constitution, and if whenever financial or civil liberties are involved, both sides of the government, Republican and Democrat, agree. The president signs a new Patriot Act, and he signs it in under cover of darkness because he's afraid those to whom he promised he wouldn't do so might see a picture of him doing it. The president, when he was a senator, blasted George W. Bush for conducting an illegal war. He's killed as many people as Bush ever did and is sending drones to Pakistan in more so in 1 year than Bush did in eight. There is very little change that comes about via elections in this country unless and until people.
Well, there is very little change, Judge. And once they start violating the Bill of Rights and Constitution, the sky is the limit, as you know, as a constitutional law scholar and as a judge. But the general public is just now beginning to discover this. What about last week when they were still trying to just deem and pass this whole thing without even having the House vote on it? I mean, at least we forced them to back off of that, but that gives us a window into their lawless mindset.
Exactly. It shows us that they would cause to become law not only that which they haven't read, And we know they haven't read it because they made promises that their scriveners found out last night aren't in there, but that they haven't even voted on. At least we shamed them into voting on it. At least we know that Bart Stupak is no more pro-life than Barack Obama. At least we know where people truly stand on all of this, because the uproar from people all across the political spectrum forced them to vote. How odd and quaint, Alex, that our representatives should actually vote on something, and that we should be able to know how they voted. You know, when the extension of the Patriot Act was enacted in the Senate, it was done by a voice vote so that no senator was recorded as to how he or she voted on it. And when they changed the definition of the word financial institution to mean a doctor's office, a lawyer's office, the post office, a computer server, anything under the sun which would let them serve a self-written search warrant on it, that vote was taken by voice vote, so there's no record of how anybody voted on it. At least this time we have a record. So when we want to vote the bums out, we know who the bums are.
And on top of that, we have bills in the last decade introduced to make them read the Bills Act, and they fight that tooth and nail.
That Ron Paul introduces every year two simple four-line bills. Every member of Congress shall certify under oath that he or she has read a bill before voting for or against it. And every bill, this is the second one, that is introduced must cite in the Constitution the authority for the bill. Neither of those proposals, as simple, basic, and rational as could be, a junior in high school social studies could understand them. Neither of those has seen the light of day. Neither of them ever makes it to a committee for hearing. But there may be some hope, because you could have said the same thing about his proposal to audit the Fed 10 years ago. Now it has passed the House of Representatives. What will happen in the Senate? I don't know. But his persistence has caused the American public to be aware of these things and caused the public to pressure power-hungry members of Congress occasionally to do the right thing.
Judge Andrew Napolitano, as a constitutional expert, as a former judge, reading over the bill and over the subsections, there's so many things that are unconstitutional. And then there's also deception. Even the AP admits this doesn't protect people with already existing conditions,
well,
with children.
That is the one that Mrs. Pelosi and company are stumbling over this morning, Alex, because they promised Democrats, and the Democrats promised their constituents, that children with pre-existing conditions would be covered immediately. Now, put aside the fact that the federal government has no authority whatsoever. Take it to the bank. No authority whatsoever to regulate health care and to tell insurance carriers who they may insure.
But even if you're for socialism, this is another ripoff, just like communism under the Soviets was a ripoff, or socialism in England's a ripoff. Anytime they get a big pool of money, they're going to steal most of it. They're not going to give it.
Of course, because sooner or later you run out of other people's money. But in this particular case, they lied to their own people. The socialist monstrosity that they passed didn't even have in it the clauses that they used to sell it on the American people. One of which is this: your children will be taken care of from the minute the president signs it. Baloney. They didn't even read what they wrote. They didn't even write what they wrote. They just took passages and put it together. By the way, did you hear who praised the president's signing of this legislation just about 15 minutes before I was happy to come on your air?
Let me guess, Fidel Castro.
Fidel Castro praised Obamacare. That's an endorsement, if ever there was one.
Well, the state is God under the New World Order system. Let's get into the unconstitutionality of this and how you would attack it. I don't think attorney generals suing or joining their suit is enough. We need to have states nullify under the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, and to not just roll this back, but you're not going to take our highway funds. You're not going to take our education funds. I mean, I think this is a wake-up call for people to really start reversing the fact that for 100-plus years, the federal government has been expanding its authority into areas that are completely illegal.
Oh, oppression, you prey on us when we sleep. Oppression, you chase after the tired, poor, the weak.
one thing, Alex, for a state legislature and a governor to sign a piece of paper saying we stand on our 10th Amendment and we are a sovereign state. It would be quite another for a state legislature to enact legislation that did the following. Prohibit state employees from enforcing federal law. Indict federal officials who come into the state with the intention of enforcing federal law that conflicts with state law. Impose a real estate tax on federal property within the state. Now, I know that that has been unlawful for the past 200 years, but suffice it to say, we have a different Supreme Court now that might look at this differently. Drag before county and state grand juries federal officers who insist on enforcing federal law that is unconstitutional within the states. The states really have to stand up for their sovereignty. They have to do more than say we are a sovereign state. There has to be teeth to their proclamation of sovereignty. Now, I would like to see the popular election of senators done away with. I would like to see state legislatures send members of the Senate to the Senate, because then they wouldn't be stealing power from the states, or those senators would soon be out of their jobs. The federal government didn't begin to grow to gargantuan proportions until the progressive era, with the popular election of senators who were able to pander to the collectivist impulses of the masses and deliver as big a piece of pie as they could and create the permanent underclass that relied on them for support and returned it with votes.
We've seen a premeditated development of this police state in their internal documents to suppress the American people. It's the same thing worldwide. And now you have these elites going offshore, forming a global government, openly saying a bank of the world that you will pay all your carbon taxes to. We're going to talk about that in the next segment with Judge Andrew Napolitano, author of a best-selling author of multiple books. His new book is out. We'll tell you about the book and get into it before he leaves us. But getting back into solutions on this Obamacare, Judge,
right?
Am I right in saying that this is pretty much the make-it-or-break-it issue? If we give in to this and if we can't defeat this, then the sky's the limit for these tyrants.
It is. And Vice President Biden admitted as much yesterday when he said if we hadn't have passed this, we would have been toothless. And now that we've passed this, we have a lot else that we need to do. First of all, we know that the next 8 months is going to be a rush to legislation, because they know, they're not stupid, they know that they will never have the majorities in the Congress after November, if there is a November election, that they have now. So they're going to try and regulate as much as they can in the next 8 months. But think about how insidious this is. The Supreme Court has ruled countless times that the most private conversation you have, the one most utterly immune from governmental intrusion, is with your physician. More so than with your spouse, it's with your physician. This legislation purports with the stroke of a pen to do away with generations of that protection by putting a federal bureaucrat between you and your physician and permitting the bureaucrat to dictate to the physician what services are available to you and how much money is available for those services.
And it says they can share it with any federal agency they want.
And it says that those decisions by the bureaucrat are not appealable. Everything under the sun that the government does, except the Supreme Court, because that's the last appeal, is appealable. But this legislation says it's not appealable. So they violate your right to privacy. They violate your right to talk to your physician without the government there. They violate your right to the privacy of your medical records. They decide how much money is available to pay your physician for the services that you may need. Is this the government that the framers gave us? Or is this, as you say, Alex, so nicely, the breaking point? Is this the point beyond which they cannot go? Now, that leads us to the constitutional challenges. To me, the violation of privacy and the order that all Americans shall purchase something, whether they want it, need it, can afford it, already have it or not, purchase something that the government approves of, are the two most obvious unconstitutional aspects of this. There are many others. It's against the Constitution for the Congress to tell a state legislature how it must legislate and how it must spend. That's called commandeering the legislature. That's been prohibited for many years, but the Congress does it and gets away with it anyway.
Well, hold on. That's another key point you just rattled off, is that and we've heard the state legislatures and governors and attorney generals talk about this, and it's in the bill, that it in some cases doubles the amount of money that states must levy to give to Medicare and Medicaid.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Now, normally, when the Congress wants to control a state legislature, it bribes it. So, for example, did you ever wonder why speed limits are the same all around the country? Did you ever wonder why the blood alcohol content in a person's veins sufficient to charge them for drunk driving is the same in every state? Did all 50 states just magically adopt the same standards? No. The Congress adopted the standards, was told by its lawyers these standards wouldn't fly because the Constitution doesn't authorize the Congress to do this. So the Congress went to the states and said, here's hundreds of millions of dollars to repave your highways. But if you accept this money, you have to legislate about speed limits and blood alcohol content as we want. That's a bribe. If you or I, Alex, or anybody listening to us now went to a state legislature and said, here's cash, now write the law the way I want it, we would be arrested, and rightly so, for attempted bribery. In this case, with this health care legislation, there is no bribe. There is an outright command from the Congress to the state legislatures. You shall license more physicians. You shall spend more money. When the Congress does that, that's called commandeering a state legislature. And the Supreme Court in the past 15 years has twice prohibited the Congress from doing that. So that's another unconstitutional aspect of this.
Judge, you're right when you make the point, this is the mad rush. And now that they've already done something this unpopular and committed political suicide, Kerry's saying, hey, we got to go ahead and pass the carbon tax. We got to go ahead and pass blanket total amnesty. We've got to go ahead and pass cybersecurity, which even the Associated Press says allows Obama to completely shut the web off if he so chooses. They want to pass the new enemy belligerence act that says for any intelligence value or such other matters as the president considers, you may be secretly arrested and interrogated and held. I mean, they are, and Lindsey Graham is arguing for similar legislation.
Do you know how hideous that piece of legislation it is? It actually says the only way you can get out of military confinement and even appear before a judge, Alex, is if the House and Senate Intelligence Committees vote to let you out. What a perversion of our system of justice, that instead of having judges say to the government, thou shalt not violate the right of any person, because the Constitution protects persons, not just good persons and not just Americans, but all persons, they would have themselves, politicians, assume the judicial role and decide who can get away from the waterboarding and into a federal prison instead.
This is an orgy of power grabbing.
Yes, it is.
By the executive and legislative. And again, I hear all these neocons on radio and TV saying, oh, we don't want to let Al-Qaeda go. But the point is, we know that all of this is written and we have the Homeland Security internal documents. This whole thing is designed and pointed at returning veterans, gun owners, conservatives, libertarians. This is for the American people.
You know, when Janet, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, Janet, what's her name, announced that the most dangerous people on the planet were the groups you just indicated. Right-to-lifers, people who believe in the Second Amendment, returning veterans from the wars, people who think taxes are too high and the government is too onerous.
Heart and soul of the Republican Party. The leadership predominantly are, as you said, just the other wing of the big government party. They're the twins.
Right.
And
I'll
everywhere.
If George W. Bush had proposed Obamacare, the Republicans that are screaming the loudest now would be supporting it. That's what I think of their fidelity to the Constitution, to the primacy of the individual, and to the free market. To them, it's just a game of R versus D. It has nothing to do with the natural law or human liberty. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I wanted to get that in because
I totally agree.
Republicans claim to be pure here. They're no more pure than the other side. They just happen to be in the minority, so it's convenient and comfortable for them to oppose this monstrosity.
Well, I agree with you. Let me then pose the question this way for you. We've seen top Republican strategists come out against Rand Paul and say they've got to defeat them. They're now allowing the head election official who's running against Rand Paul and the Republican Party to not recuse himself but run the election that he himself is running in.
Correct.
The Associated Press. So I want to get your take on that. We have all these other Republican strategists demonizing the Tea Parties, demonizing the birthers. We know his name's Barry Sitaro. We know he gave up his citizenship and became an Indonesian, regardless of what happened in Kenya. And where there's smoke, there's fire. We know that the mainline blue blood leadership is attempting to demonize and shut down debate and stop the American people from using the Republican Party to take our country back. What are your expert recommendations, because those were, I mean, absolutely spot on earlier on what the state should do with Obamacare. What is your recommendation for the American people to not just let the Republicans play the part of opposition and then get in power and basically go along with all this?
I think the American people should vote out of office and aggressively hound out of office, lawfully, obviously, not only everyone who voted for Obamacare, but everyone who voted for TARP, proposed by George W. Bush, everyone who voted for the first two stimuluses that we've had in the past 4 years, which came from George W. Bush, everyone who voted for the Patriot Act, which came from George W. Bush, everyone who voted for any tax increase. Now, that would be about 93% to 94% of the Congress. These people's voting records must be revealed. The collusion of Rand Paul being forced to run against the guy who was in charge of counting the ballots. Even Joe Stalin wouldn't have been so bold as to do that. He would have put a crony in to count the ballots. But in Kentucky, the Republicans are forcing Rand Paul to run against the guy who will decide who wins the election. The American public cannot put up with that. They need to file lawsuits. They need to listen to you. They need to listen to what I attempt to do at Fox. They need to educate themselves. They need to know what their rights are, and they cannot take this sitting down. Now, Alex, you know I have been privileged to be the keynote speaker at many of these Tea Parties. These folks are not going away. They are not going to be co-opted by the Republicans. They are as much a threat to the Republican leadership, thank God, as they are to the Democratic leadership, because they understand that the Constitution was written to keep the government off the people's backs, not to find sneaky ways for the government to do it and get away with it.
Let's expand into Rand Paul, Ron Paul's son. I mean, sure. In many polls, he's 10 points ahead.
Right.
He's a shoo-in to win. And this illustrates, and the Republican leadership admits this, this isn't just an anti-Democrat incumbency. This is an anti-incumbent, period. And the guy he's running against is getting all this AIG banker money. He's a globalist. And then meanwhile, he's going to run the election. And I talked to Rand Paul's people 2 days ago, and they talked about, they went to the commission and they said unanimously, no, he can run your election. But then we looked at past rulings in other states. They've always said someone has to recuse themselves if they're the state's head election official and are running. I mean, again, it just shows how every form of common sense and checks and balances are being removed. And when you have a real constitutionalist running for an office, in come the Republican Party to try to destroy them.
They fear someone like Rand Paul just as much as they fear his father, Ron Paul, because of their utter fidelity to the Constitution and to the natural law and to the belief that the individual is greater than the government. Even in my home state of New Jersey, notorious for corruptions and political prosecutions, it is against the law for the collector of the ballots to be on the ballot when he's collecting them. It's almost inconceivable that this could be happening in Kentucky right underneath our noses and the courts won't interfere with it. Listen, I think that Rand Paul will win the primary and will win the election and will be an unbelievable asset in the United States Senate in spite of this. I can't advise him as to whether or not he should file a lawsuit. Candidly, I don't think he needs to do so. But there is a general principle of law that if the government's behavior appears to be in a conflict, then the person that is creating the appearance of a conflict should step back. This guy can run against Rand Paul, or this guy can count the votes in the election that Rand Paul is running in. But nobody in their right mind would say that he could do both at the same time and be absolutely honest. That's too much of a temptation for a human being to have to endure and for the electorate to have to abide by.
Well, I mean, you've got all the election officials under him that are being promised jobs in the U.S. Senate.
Absolutely. They're all political appointees, Alex. So he can take them to, well, he's not going to go to the Senate, but he can promise to take them to the Senate with him. So will they look the other way when a group of absentee ballots suddenly disappears into the river or suddenly shows up in somebody's trunk? This will force Dr. Paul, Rand Paul, to hire more poll watchers, to hire more people, to watch the government, because the government cannot be trusted to run an honest election, because the guy running the election is running against Rand Paul. This is just absurd.
Well, I mean, if this precedent gets set, this new corrupt precedent, pretty soon the only people that can get elected anywhere will be the head of elections. Suddenly, that'll be the only person that can run and win, and then they'll become kings, and their kids will be the only ones that can win.
Sort of like Alexander Hamilton when he wanted George Washington to be a king. You know what I think will happen? Rand Paul wins by such a large number that all of their sneaking and trickery will not be enough to affect the outcome. And this collector of ballots who also wants to be on the Senate will be relegated to the dustbin of history where he belongs.
Well, we're already running out of time. It's always amazing having him. We got 15 minutes left here. I want to get into the book, Lies the Government Told You, but first, specifically, the Democrats and Lindsey Graham, the Republicans, they all know that carbon dioxide isn't bad. They all know that China isn't going to make the cuts. They all know that this will be industrial suicide, and we have all these big environmentalists saying they want to destroy our economy. Why does government want to destroy the economy?
Government wants to control us because of what St. Augustine called libido dominandi. Look, we all know about certain types of libido. This is a lust for power. Before the Civil War, we sent people to our state houses and to Congress who were interested in liberty, who were concerned with confining the government, with assuring that it did not interfere with our natural rights, with our civil liberties, and with our property rights. Since the Civil War, we have sent people to the government, by and large. There are exceptions both before the Civil War and afterwards. But by and large, people who are not interested in liberty, but people who are interested in power, power for its own sake, power in and of itself, power to control other people. Government attracts those who lust for power. Ron Paul and Rand Paul and Ron Paul's colleagues in the House, and if there are any in the Senate, I'm unaware of them, are the exception to the rule. But for the most part, this is the type of human being that the government attracts. And this type of illicit aggregation of power gets worse and worse and worse, because when they get power, they hand it off to their successors, just like Mike Chertoff handed it off to Janet Napolitano. And I know what you're thinking. The answer is no. We are not related. This happens generation after generation after generation. That's why I am not optimistic about our future, because it will take a generation of Doctors Paul to change this, to stop it, to reverse it.
Support this radio show and to support our films. We have two new films coming out in the middle of April. Order them at Infowars.com, Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined, and Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA. You'll also see them premiere at PrisonPlanet.tv in super high quality. But go buy the DVDs, make copies, give them to everyone you know, because one of the most effective things that we have ever done is these films, and this unlocks people's minds. It shows them the predatory nature of this global elite. What is the nature of this world government from your research, and then tie that in to the overarching system of why they want a global government so no one can run and flee and set up societies that are free, because then that competes with the collectivist and outshines them in every case. So speak to that, and then you've got the floor in the last 11 minutes on any issue you want to cover.
Oh, you are so kind and so generous to me, Alex, and I'm deeply grateful to be here. Look, I'm just a simple night watchman that's employed by Fox. My job is to watch the government in the nighttime when it doesn't think that people are watching it and doesn't want people to look at it, to see what it is doing to steal our freedom and to steal our property. The one world government has been around since the progressive era. And you're right, Alex, these people are enormously patient. Obviously, the people who came up with this concept are no longer with us, but their successors are. They are wealthier, they are more sophisticated, and they are just as committed as their predecessors were. They simply want control. They want power for the joy of exercising power in and of itself. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. They don't want to have to answer to voters. They don't want to have to answer to a constitution that limits their behavior. They want to be able to take whatever property they can, whether they call it eminent domain, whatever they want to call the process by which they take it. They want to protect us cradle to grave so that we are totally dependent upon them for everything, so they can decide who will be in their group and who won't. If you read George Orwell's 1984, he was just off by a couple of years, but almost everything that was in there was predicted, and we see it now. The use of law to assault liberty and to steal property. Do you remember, Alex, studying basic American history? The King of England had ingenious ways to tax us. The last straw was the Stamp Act. It required that every colonist have on every piece of paper in his or her home a stamp. Every book, every bank draft, every mortgage, every lease, every deed, every pamphlet, even a poster that was going to be nailed to a tree had to have the king's stamp on it. Imagine having to go, we have enough difficulties with the post office as it is, you had to go to a foreign post office in the colonies and buy the king's stamp. Question, how did the government know if you had the king's stamp on every piece of paper in your house? Answer, the Parliament enacted the Townshend Acts, which permitted British soldiers to write their own search warrants, and thus they would show up at your home and hand you a piece of paper on which they had purported to authorize themselves to enter your home, ostensibly to look for the stamps. Of course, they would confiscate alcohol, they would confiscate furniture which you couldn't demonstrate you had paid taxes on, they would even sometimes kick you out of the house and take it over for days or weeks or months. We fought a revolution. We won the revolution. We wrote a constitution. We added the Fourth Amendment to that constitution, which next to the right to life is the greatest right there is, the right to be left alone. And it says the government can't come onto your property and can't seize what you have and can't intrude into your privacy unless it goes to a judge and demonstrates to a neutral judge that it is more likely than not that you are committing crime. Fast forward 200 years to the Patriot Act. What does the Patriot Act do? It allows federal agents to write their own search warrants. We have elected a government that has done the very same thing to us, which was the last straw when we broke away from an island 3,000 miles away that was regulating us as if we were chattel and as if we were slaves to them. When Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence the words that every school child knows, Alex, by heart, all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, he wedded the American soul to the idea of the natural law, that our rights come from nature, from our humanity, that we are created in the image and likeness of God, and as he is perfectly free, he has given us the gift of perfect freedom. in Philadelphia in 1787 when they argued all summer about how the government should look and what the Constitution should be, they began with an argument about what is the source of our rights. And Alexander Hamilton, the big government guy of the day, the guy who said debt was good, even in 1787, argued that without the government there can be no rights, and the same government that gives rights can take them away. Madison refuted him toe-to-toe, point-to-point, and said our rights come from our humanity. Madison won. Read the First Amendment. It doesn't say Congress shall grant freedom of speech. It says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Why do I emphasize the word the? Because the framers recognized that freedom of speech preexisted the government, preexisted the country, came by virtue of our birth. And the purpose of the First Amendment was to assure that Congress, and ultimately the president, and eventually the courts, and one day the states, could not interfere with the basic freedoms. The right to think as you wish, the right to say what you think, the right to publish what you say, the right to worship or not to worship, the right to come and go as you see fit, the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances, the right to defend yourself, Alex, by any technologically advanced means that are available at any given time, which includes the right to shoot at the government when it is taken over by tyrants. And then, of course, the right to be left alone in the Fourth Amendment. All of these rights are natural to us. And every person in the government takes an oath to uphold the Constitution, meaning upholding the inviolability of these rights. But in my years on the bench, and I write about this in the book, every time the government was in front of me, Alex, it wasn't to enforce the Constitution. It wasn't to protect someone's rights. It was to find some sneaky or ingenious way to get around the Constitution, but claim that they were enforcing it. Now, my new book, and I'm very happy to tell you that as of a few minutes ago, it's number 13 on the New York Times bestseller list. That doesn't mean the Times approves of the book, hardly. It means that the most public counter of book sales is ranking me number 13, which is very good because then it gets published in that list. And a lot of folks that don't watch Fox or listen to Alex Jones or don't know me will be exposed to the book. The book posits the following. Why do we expect that the government will lie? Why do we know that the government lies and do nothing about it? Would Lyndon Johnson have beaten Barry Goldwater in 64 if we knew that he was secretly planning to invade North Vietnam as he accused Goldwater of doing? Would FDR have been elected in 44, reelected in 44, if the public had known that he caused Pearl Harbor because he needed an excuse to enter World War II? Would George W. Bush have been reelected in 2004 if people knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and that he knew it and ought to have known it, that he was torturing people and lying about it, that he was listening to people's phone calls and capturing their computer strokes, all in violation of federal law? That's what the book challenges Americans, Alex, to be aware of, to recognize, to reject, and to correct. My dear friend, I've enjoyed all my time with you.
And in closing, why do we put up with the lying? Why have we gotten to a point where it's just accepted they lie? But then that 20% that supports the government health bill still believe they're getting something free. And the system is going for broke because they passed the point of no return. They have committed so many crimes. They're so lawless. They've stolen so much. They know the country's going bankrupt. Bloomberg reports the feds are openly getting ready to take pension funds to fund their operations and to fund the banks. They have decided to go all the way, just like Hitler or Stalin or Mao. And it's time for the public to wake up. I mean, you mentioned the Stamp Act. Here is New Jersey CBS Television, CBS TV, WCBS. Cops in New Jersey town giving keys to homes. And the cops are saying, we're putting keys on all your doors. And that we are now going to go into your house to make sure you're safe. And now they have zoning laws in Illinois and other places where people wake up and they do inspections without asking to see how many toothbrushes you have to make sure that you don't have more people in your house than you're zoned for. It is incredible. Judge Andrew Napolitano, I want to really thank you for joining us. and spending time with us. Fire out your website.
Judge Knapp at FoxNews.com. Alex, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for letting me share these airwaves with your wonderful listeners.
We appreciate you never compromising and being a true constitutionalist. God bless and Godspeed. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This to be an unlawful assembly.
Arriving in Pittsburgh for the G20 summit are finding a city on lockdown.
In that moment, my eardrums were blasting, and as that happened, I basically turned around, saw about 40 riot police assisted by military.
They're closing in. Run! Get out of here! Hold you!
This is why police save us
all! You must leave immediately.
This was the talk of the town in Hardin on Thursday. Mercedes decked out in the City of Hardin Police Department decals and driven by American Police Force members.
We're not disclosing the name of our parent company.
We know the guy that owns the company, but we've never seen this name before.
Excuse me, you just dropped a bomb on us. This is Red Dawn, foreign mercenary group admitted, driving around doing police work with Hardin Police next to their American Police Force logos. This is insane.
Passengers describe a terror attack and the arrest of a suspect.
So he's a controlled asset. And of course, it's not a matter of failure to connect the dots.
The FBI now has five versions of their story.
Can you add how they were already getting in Yemen? That's how.
The scanning machines that we currently are beginning to deploy.
He told me to go through the scanner, and I said no.
It's a real act of submission. They were involved in a cover-up. This is huge.
Yeah.
want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We always look forward to our once-a-month visit with Congressman Ron Paul. He's got to go in 14 minutes. I got my atomic clock to a key vote. Got to be in a committee room. So he's with us now. I'm going to move quickly. First off, Congressman, you won the straw poll at CPAC, proving that most of the Republicans are not warmongering neocons. You got 84% approval rating in Texas. You won by a record 80% in the primary, showing that America supports what you're doing. Can you comment on the fact that, your take on this?
I was very pleased and somewhat surprised, but it was a delight to have won that CPAC vote. But you know what was interesting is, the people who oppose us, they're still significant. If I get 32% of the vote, that means there's a large number who are still complaining, and they're part of the establishment. But what I thought was interesting is all the sour grapes that was expressed afterwards. They were complaining, and, oh, this is not for real, like they did in the campaign. But what was interesting is somebody said that, what we need to do is for CPAC to have any credibility, they have to change the way they vote. So somebody made the suggestion that nobody under 25 would be allowed to vote, which means, and you know it too, that there are a lot of young people who are interested in what we're talking about, and I think that's fortunate. The next generation is not later on, but currently they're inheriting this mess. So I'm delighted to talk to young people. But this whole idea that the people who don't like us challenging the status quo say, well, let's not let them vote next time. But I think that there's a lot of people are coming our way every year. And in the last two or three years that there's been tremendous growth in our movement. And that makes me very encouraged.
Absolutely. I want to cut to the chase here. And before we get into the banking situation, a few months ago, you were speaking at a Campaign for Liberty event, and you threw the gauntlet down, as you did back in the 80s in some videos I've seen. You said we've had a CIA coup in America. They're bringing in the drugs. Most people don't know, in 96, the CIA Inspector General before Congress admitted that. But it's wider than that. We know Wall Street and the banking cartel, the Federal Reserve System, through Yale and other outfits, set up the OSS and CIA. And you came right out and basically said, this is our illegitimate government. And that ties into the banks engineering the financial collapse, now saying they're getting ready for an even bigger collapse sometime this year in a constitution of the world run by the banks, as Gordon Brown and others called for. Can you specifically speak to who runs the coup, who they are, and how we remove them? Because by openly coming out and really telling it like it is, we can cut to the chase.
Well, I have trouble naming names because I don't know all the names, but the one thing I can verify is that the people who should have responsibility for our national security intelligence gathering, the U.S. Congress, they have no idea what's going on. We do know there's been evidence brought forth that the CIA actually can own banks, and there's been fairly strong evidence that the CIA has been involved in drug dealing. There are times when I think the war in Afghanistan, we say it has to do with pipes and oil, gas pipeline and oil and other commercial things, but the other commercial thing may be the drug trade. Maybe the CIA is in competition with the drug dealers over there because there's a lot of self-financing in these organizations. But I don't take the position that I know all those answers, and I don't know everything that the Fed does. But my approach is that we, the people deserve, and the Congress has a responsibility to find out what they're doing. And if they're not doing it, fine and dandy, we'll clear the air. But if they are doing it, it will give us more ammunition for the reason why we need a different monetary system and we need to have a different system of collecting intelligence, because they can tell us anything. Remember how we went to war in Iraq. The CIA was very much involved up there and say the CIA, they have weapons of mass destruction. They're about to attack us. And it was based on false information. And this is what disturbs me the most, and that's why I want much, much more transparency of what our government is doing.
Well, those were strong statements you made a few months ago, and you just echoed them. But specifically, Congress, as you know, has had hearings in the 70s about the shadow government, continuity of government, The Homeland Security Committee in the House has not been allowed to see the full text of PDD 51. We know we've seen a 12-fold in the last 8-year increase in opium out of Afghanistan. We know that 2 years ago, a CIA aircraft that had been used for torture flights crashed in Mexico with pure cocaine, 3.5 tons, meaning coming directly from the source, uncut. I mean, this is just comes out in Mena, Arkansas, over and over again. And so when you talk about a coup over America, how do we ever ferret this out and remove it? I mean, do we start, as you've been calling for, an audit of the private Federal Reserve?
Yeah, it won't happen until the people become really outraged. They are growing in their outrage, but it has to translate into different ideas and different respect for the Constitution, different people up here, and we're in the midst of this transition, and as the crisis worsens, you know, the real challenge is will we end up with a dictatorship, or are we going to have people who are demanding, you know, a republic and open government, and that might take another 10, 15 years to determine, but in the midst of a crisis, it's the worst time to present our views, so that's why we have to do our best to get as many people to agree with us as possible so that in the rebuilding that we have some ideas about what the monetary system should be like and what our foreign policy ought to be like, which means that if we had a proper foreign policy, the incentive to have this CIA making excuses for knowing everything about us and everything that's going on in the world, that would all change. I don't believe that we shouldn't have some intelligence gathering, but I don't like these clandestine operations and killings and things that we've known to have happened.
It's incredible. We've only got 4 minutes left with Congressman Ron Paul. We appreciate him joining us live today. The New York Times is reporting they may try to revive the carbon tax with a direct tax on fuel at the refinery. Senate trio hopes to hit pay dirt with carbon fee at the oil company's request. Where is the carbon tax going, as well as health care?
Well, it's hard for me to believe they'll do that, even though it's alive and they want to, and that's their goal, and they will if they can. But under these conditions, it is so bad of an idea, it just blows my mind to think that they'll pursue that. So I don't know the details on whether that's going to go through or not, but I can guarantee you there's plenty up here who still believe in it and will pursue it. But I hope they come to their senses and realize how detrimental it would be. As a special interest, we'll want to get in and try to control it.
Well, to see the establishment trying to pose as anti-establishment is truly sickening. but I mean, look at your 84% approval rating. People know the real McCoy. 1 minute left. The economy. A lot of top economists are now agreeing with you and others that we may have a mega depression in the next 16 months, and they're positioning the IMF and World Bank with a new global constitution where they will pose as saviors again. How concerned are you that this recession could get a lot worse?
Well, I think it is going to get a lot worse, and what is happening now is Wall Street's recovered and a few companies have recovered, but the unemployment rate is still very high and getting worse. And there will be plans. I'm sure they've been talking about it for quite a few years, because those who run the international banking system know that they're in trouble, so they are laying plans for this. But people do ask me about, well, do you think this will bring on the North American Union and North American currency? And I really don't think so. I think the bigger concern should be a worldwide currency and the IMF and the United Nations grabbing hold and trying to dictate to us. But we have economic laws on our side because, you know, you can propose these things, and even if it does serve the special interest, if it violates economic law, it won't work. So they can't maintain a good currency. And that's why I think the European Union is very, very fragile, not only the euro, but the union as well, because it's artificial. And I think that's what would happen on a world government and a world currency. But in the meantime, it could get pretty messy, and they're going to work very hard to get organized, which means they'll work hard to undermine our personal liberties.
Congressman, we're going to let you go. In closing, I just want to say no one in Congress that I've ever studied works as hard as you, does as much media, writes as much legislation. You are a champion. God bless you.
Thank you very much. Got to go.
Take care. There he goes to run to his vote. Absolutely amazing.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
you're watching at PrisonPlanet.tv, you can see the photos of Barry Sitaro in the Mail newspaper. He's got his teacher talking about his name being Barry Sitaro. We've got the school admittance form, religion Islam. And I'm not attacking Muslims. The point is he lies about all this. He was raised as a Muslim, both his dads. He lies about it. His real name's Barry Sitaro. His school records are all sealed in the U.S. in college. He clearly had CIA connections. Barry Sitaro. See that at the very top? Religion, Islam. And I'll show you this document cam shot. Meet the chubby boy with the curly hair. New photographs of Barack Obama childhood in Indonesia emerge. And how he was Barry Sitaro. And another issue, I want to read from the back of Fall of the Republic. It talks about President Obama has brazenly violated Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution by seating himself at the head of the United Nations Security Council, thus becoming the first U.S. president to chair the world body. That is high treason. And they're doing this to set precedents. We've got a top lawyer on who can explain how this is being done by design. So I guess Schwarzenegger can be president. Next, they'll tell us he was born here. Philip J. Berg is a former deputy attorney general of Pennsylvania, former candidate for governor and U.S. Senate in Democratic primaries, former chair of the Democratic Party in Montgomery County, former member of the Democratic State Committee and attorney with offices in Montgomery County, PA, is an active practice in Philadelphia, PA. He is a paid life member of the NAACP and voluntary fire police for 27 years. Phil Berg, philjberg.com, obamacrimes.com. And you want a march to go to on the health care, the birth certificate, all of it? He's got a date. You need to be there. All of you that want to have a big march, here it is. And the alternative media cover it. It'll be out there regardless with millions of views. Now, we're going to talk to Phil, who's a Democrat, by the way, about his view of this healthcare plan as well. And we're going to continue with your phone calls. But first, the issue of Obama's illegitimacy. If we can prove, and we have proven he uses a fake name, and then he's not a U.S. citizen, everything he's done is null and void. This is a very serious issue right now, ladies and gentlemen. We have absolutely got to get out there ahead of this right now and take our states back. As a former deputy attorney general in your state, as a skilled practitioner of law, someone who's practicing the federal and state courts, Phil Berg, on the healthcare issue first, how do you see us defeating this? I mean, it's discriminatory. Some of the big unions are exempt from the Cadillac policy tax. Some states are more exempt than others. It forces people who don't want insurance to go pay money to private groups. The insurance companies wrote this. Phil Berg.
My pleasure to be on your show, Alex. As you just said forth, there's so many reasons to knock this bill out, to overturn this bill. I think various attorney generals in various states have already filed suit. Many, many more are going to come. But you highlight the significant part. It's just unfair. They made a deal with the unions. They made a deal with certain states. You know, here the federal government is forcing people to buy insurance. That's different than the federal government taxing people. And if you don't buy insurance, they're going to penalize you, and the penalties are going to increase, and the penalties to the companies here. This is just a really socialist takeover. Every member, what you said here, anyone who voted for that bill, people should vote against them this year. If there's not a strong, or in some places, if a Republican didn't file an action against them, because a lot of the deadlines for filing have passed, especially here in Pennsylvania, then people should run as an independent in those districts and find out how to get on the ballot, because this is really outrageous. 80% of the people in the country say they do not want health care reform. And what do we have here? They pass it anyhow. They don't care about us. The kickbacks that some of these people must be getting, the money under the table, the promises by Obama and other people, so many people must be making, Obama's friends have to be making a fortune to push this forward. But the other thing is, they give some benefits this year, but the taxation starts this year, and other benefits, supposed benefits, don't kick in to 2014. That means they're going to have to, they're going to tax for 10 years to pay benefits for 6 years. I mean, this is just totally outrageous, and we have to do everything we can. Right now, I know Gary Krept, he's going to file a lawsuit. The various attorney generals are filing a lawsuit. And also, history goes back that if enough pressure goes on, I mean, it looks doubtful, but Congress could repeal the act. But the best way to get them to repeal is really, and I'm a lifelong Democrat, as you said, they have to vote out all these people, even the people on safe seats. I don't think any Democratic safe seat is safe right now when 80% of the people in this country don't want it.
Well, Phil Berg, you said it, though. I've been saying 70-plus percent, but many polls now show 80% or more when people actually read the bill. It says the IRS will decide and will be looking at your medical records and your bills. Everything goes to them now, and they're going to share it with other agencies, that if you get treatments that they say shouldn't be covered, even if you own your own insurance, they're going to put extra taxes on you. I mean, this gets involved in commerce. This gets involved in free choice. This makes private individuals buy a plan from a private group. We know the insurance companies really wrote this bill, and their stocks way up. What about lawsuits against the insurance companies for going in and lobbying to make the government make you pay them money?
Perhaps. And the other thing is, when you mentioned IRS, I think I saw in the bill there that they're going to hire 16,000 new IRS agents.
Now it's 20.
Oh, it's 20,000. To look at you and look at me, and I mean, it's outrageous. The IRS should not be involved in this. I mean, there's so many factors here, and everyone, we have to pay attention the next couple of days, because there's so many different things in this 2,000-page document that no one's even read. And it's outrageous. I think we have to do everything. And I think the people that you have empowered up to now have to be empowered more to stand up and not let any of these, there should be, when the break comes up now for Easter and Passover and these Congress people go back home, if they're holding town halls, people should really go after these things and tell them how upset they are. Some of the people, like I'm right outside of Philadelphia, and the districts here are considered very safe Democratic seats because they're like probably 80%, 90% Democratic.
Yeah, so was Kennedy's seat. So was Kennedy's seat in Massachusetts, and that's the issue. A lot of Democrats are mad about this.
Oh, right, right. People really are when you get down the rank and file, down to the people here. So I think you have to keep your message out there. I'm going to put my message out. Now, you mentioned, and I don't have a firm date, as soon as I do, any day now, we're planning a birth certificate eligibility march on Washington. And on that, we can tack on this health care thing. I think this could turn out to be the biggest march in the history of Washington, D.C. And if the people come out and the national media, we can force them. Once you get so many people, they're going to have to cover this, and we're going to insist on it. We're asking people to bring a copy of their birth certificate. Note my words out there, people. Obama is a phony. Obama is a fraud. Obama is a usurper, as Alex will go into and show you the pictures. The issue is really not even where he was born. I really do believe 1,000% he was born in Kenya, therefore he's not natural born. But more significant is the adoption. He's adopted in Indonesia. Once he's adopted, people stop and think for a minute. You know people in your neighborhood or relatives that are adopted. And I had a discussion with an immigration.
You have to give your citizenship up. If you adopt a Korean baby, they give up the Korean citizenship and become American. If Koreans adopt an American, you give up your American, you become a Korean. We know he was adopted as an Islamicist in Indonesia. End of the story. His name is Barry Sataro. He is a fraud. Party leadership try to protect Barry Sataro.
Well, the problem is, and I think you said it basically on that, the problem is many people in Washington of both parties, the higher they become, they're in bed together. And they really could care less about us. I mean, even though the Republicans didn't support this health care thing, you know, the pressure could have been on out here, more so than they did. I mean, they held it off as much as they could. But the pressure should now be on the Republicans to get more Republicans elected this year so they can repeal this act, because this is not a good act. You know, we do need medical reform in this country, but not the way they just shoved it down our throats. And with that, the taxation on individuals, the taxation on businesses if they don't take out health care, the IRS looking over the shoulder. I understand there's a provision there that if you don't pay the bill or something like that, they'll attach your bank account. I mean, this is really
no, it's there,
and we have to stop it.
I mean, imagine all the IRS's unconstitutional abuses, and now they're going to every month be looking at your paycheck records and the health care you've gotten and fine you if you get health care they don't agree with. That is in the bill. Okay, Phil Berg, you've got this big march coming up. We'll have you on as soon as you announce the date. Everybody needs to go to this. It's not going to solve everything, but it'll be another big step towards doing that. Reading the Mail newspaper with him, it says his teachers, his name was Barry Sitaro. He admits his name was Barry Sitaro. He was adopted. We know he was obviously not born here. He was born in Kenya. But regardless, we've got him on the citizenship issue because he shouldn't be able to be a U.S. citizen because he's an Indonesian citizen. But all of that is sealed. Where do we go from there?
Well, first off, what you say is absolutely true. And then some people come up and say, well, dual citizenship. For dual citizenship to exist, but it wouldn't give him the right to be president, both countries must have that. That has not occurred. Indonesia now has dual citizenship as of the year 2005, and it's not retroactive. So back when he was born in 1961, when he was adopted around 1964 or 65, there was no dual citizenship. He is adopted. Those school records, AP filmed them, a TV show filmed them. They're accurate, true records. And that's why when he went to Occidental, people know him as Barry. His real name is Barry Sitaro. So every time he uses his name, Barack Hussein Obama, that's a fraud. He committed fraud in 50 states to run for president. Every time he got sworn in, Barack Hussein Obama.
What do you think of the movement of everybody calling him Barry Sitaro now?
That's what we should do. We should actually call him Barry Sitaro. But we really have to.
And they can't stop us. I mean, that's a health care way to protest. That could bring him down if just everybody starts calling him Barry Sitaro, the Indonesian citizen known as Barack Obama.
Right, because it's illegal. You know, if you have an adopted name, that's your real name, okay? That's your legal name. I mean, I'd like to see, but we can't see any of his records. All of his records are sealed. Again, for your listeners out there, why would you spend over $1.6 million fighting all the lawsuits if you had nothing to hide? He is not a natural-born citizen. The strongest case I have, Alex, is pending in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, where I have sued Obama, stating that he's not natural-born, he's not naturalized, but he's an illegal alien, and therefore the salary and benefits he received as a U.S. senator were fraudulent, and therefore that money, about $1 million, should go back to the U.S. Treasury. I'm hoping the courts can do something with that, but I doubt it. There's so much pressure on the courts coming from Obama and Obama's people.
From Barry Sitaro. From Barry Sitaro.
Yeah, we can do something. We, the people, can do something. And we can mobilize and do things peacefully. We're going to start putting stuff up on our website about flyers they could download for the march. As soon as I get the march date, I'll call you back on that. But we have to start doing stuff. We can even get people, we'll have it up on our website soon, to have signs out there. Five people can stand over at a bridge on a major roadway during rush hour, and you can affect between 5,000 and 25,000 people. So we can mobilize. This issue, I think this health care thing is probably the greatest thing to help us put put Barry Sitaro in his place. Barry Sitaro, Michelle Obama, or I guess her name is really
Michelle Sitaro.
Michelle Sitaro, Howard Dean, other officials at the Democratic National Convention, committee, senior campaign people, and senior administration people, they should all be subjected to the criminal justice system and tried, and those that are convicted should go to jail. And with this, any day now, Alex, and you'll get it, I'm issuing a press release calling for the deep throat of Barry Sitaro. Someone out there is going to want to save their can, and they will give us the information, the final information we need. Remember, on the situation with Watergate, Nixon didn't go down because of the break-in. Nixon went down because of the cover-up. We now have Obama in office for 15 months, and we have a massive cover-up. So we can get to him peacefully, and I think we can do it with, you know, thank God there's people like you out there that will talk about the truth out here.
And it came out last year that Barry Sitaro, masquerading as Barack H. Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, that he's got a full team with an enemies list going after the birthers. I mean, they've got the Republican Party leadership against us. That means where there's smoke, there's fire. Talking to Phil Berg, Attorney Phil Berg, former Deputy Attorney General of Pennsylvania, a guy of real conscience who stood up on so many important issues. I guess in the final equation, it is good news that people are finally really starting to read the bills and they're finding out just how criminal this group is. But take the carbon taxes. They say they're going to try to pass that where Barry Sitaro and Michelle Sitaro and their controllers can shut down any factories they want or any businesses. You take the takeover of the car industries. If you were a big Democratic donor, you got to keep your car dealership. If you weren't, they went down. This came out in Congress. They would take your dealership away. I mean, you've studied Barack Obama. Am I right in saying he is a complete mafia thug?
He's just think for a minute. He is so bad. The people he associated with. If he applied for a job as a Chicago police officer, he couldn't even get the job because of associations with Bill Ayers and Reverend and the other people around him. He couldn't get a job as an FBI agent or a Secret Service agent, yet they're protecting him now. I mean, this guy is so bad. We don't know how he came on the scene. We don't know who the payoff went to. He deceived the American public, and I think he's getting blackmailed now, ladies and gentlemen. I think I might have mentioned this before, but think about it. The cabinet he has is not a cabinet of change. It's basically Bill Clinton's cabinet, 70%. The programs he's put forth in the past 15 months, it's not a programs of change. I think he's being told what to do. Remember, Alex, at the beginning, he wanted to keep his BlackBerry. So I don't know whatever happened, but that's probably how he gets messages. Someone's controlling him. Someone's telling him what to do. I think back then they said, Phil Berg's right. You're a fraud. You're a phony. You want to be president, you got to play ball our way. And I think that's why we have the cabinet we have, and that's why we have the push on the program he has. But it's time. Listen, what they did this health care is outrageous. When 80% of the people in this country say we don't want it, and they go ahead and pass something like that. Hopefully the 80% of the people will stay together and vote out every one of these people.
Saying they're going to spend $3 billion, or one report says $3 billion a year in government-run TV ads with taxpayer money telling us how great this is and lying to us over the next 10 years. I mean, how much money is that? The next three, that's $9 billion. So I guess it's more than 20-something billion. I mean, this is totally insane. And what scares me, Phil, is this is an all-or-nothing game for these people. They're clearly going for broke. And I agree with Michael Savage. I believe Obama may stage terror attacks to blame it on his political enemies as a pretext to save his agenda.
I wouldn't doubt anything about him. But how about the other part, the Medicare? He says they're going to take $500 billion out of Medicare, but then he has the audacity to tell people on Medicare that none of your benefits are going to get cut. I mean,
yeah, let me stop you again. They're saying 30-plus million will be forced to buy insurance who are working poor, and then they're saying another 10 to 15 million will go on Medicare and Medicaid, but they're going to cut it by $500 billion. That's their number. Some of the numbers show it's a trillion. How do you bring more people on the program and cut the funding and then still give the care?
No more Mr. Nice Guy. No more Mr. Clean. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Free market gave us the best healthcare in the world. Government involvement in the last 35 years is what screwed up our health care. So we're going to get James Dillingpole's take on that. His website's jamesdillingpole.com. He's also a best-selling author. We'll tell you all about that before he leaves us. Wrote a best-selling book on Obama, and certainly turned out to be very, very accurate. It was released right as Obama got into office last year. But this isn't just James Dillingpole saying this. This is the National Post of Canada. Here's the London Guardian. Give me a document cam shot. How going green may make you mean. Ethical consumers less likely to be kind and more likely to steal, many times more likely. And the BBC even said, the greenies are criminals. Dillingpole had a tongue-in-cheek article, but very serious in the body. Greens sacrifice babies to Satan, sell grandmothers into slavery, etc. Well, remember what happened down in Latin America last month? You had a wife and husband kill themselves and then try to kill the baby because they were worried about global warming. In fact, here's a story out of the Telegraph. Liars, cheats, thieves. The terrible truth about the mean greens. Here's another one. Are green consumers more unethical? Look, these people, you go to a grocery store, the paper bags bust on you. I've read the statistics that they actually create more acid, more pulp, more energy used. Not that that matters. That's industry. It's renewable. The plastic is actually better, but they don't care. They will get in your face about it. These people want your house. They want your car. And if you go to Zilker Park, there's glass everywhere in Austin, just everywhere, all over the ground. Anyone that parks an SUV, it happened to us, gets it keyed. If you're lucky, normally windows locked out, tires slashed. Hey, listen, I got three children. I got my wife. When my parents went someplace with us a few weeks ago, all of us, all seven of us could ride in the car. But these little control freaks want to run our lives. Now, I'm ranting. I apologize to Dilling Poll. We're going to get into this coming up. But first, I wanted to get into government-run health care and what it's really like from Airstrip 1 in this 1984 system. Mr. Dilling Poll, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me back, Alex. Yeah, so you want me to tell you about the British National Health Service experience. Well, it seems to me that there are two ways of allocating scarce resources, you know, to do with health. And one way is to do it through the market to, you know, if you pay, then you will get service. The other way, which is what we've got here in Britain, is a form of state rationing. Now, maybe this way of allocating healthcare was appropriate immediately after the Second World War. But somehow I feel that the world has moved beyond the Second World War mentality, where you're kind of grateful for what you get, and you know, you're happy to queue up for your rubbish service. The fact is that Britain has the lowest cancer survival rate in the G8. That in itself is a pretty grim indictment of our system. We also have, I don't know whether you follow this in America, we had the scandal of Stafford Hospital, the hospital where as many as 1,200 patients may have died because of government targets.
Oh, I saw an article last week where the guy just showed up over 3 days and died on a gurney.
Yeah, well, this sort of thing happens. At this particular hospital, patients were being left unwashed for up to a month. They were abandoned in their soiled, blood-stained sheets. The nurses weren't doing anything about it. They weren't giving them water. They weren't, you know, the patients were crying out in pain. And now, I'm not saying that this is necessarily the common experience, you know, that everyone suffers every time they go into a National Health Service hospital. Sometimes you do get good treatment. And, you know, when you do, I mean, I burned my hand once, and after my 3 hours in a waiting room that made the Star Wars cantina scene look like Baywatch, eventually I got my treatment. But you do have to wait a very long time, and often the service you get is rather grudging, because, you know, you are treated as a supplicant, not as a paying customer. You are treated more or less like you don't really deserve to be there. And
well, that's what Tom Daschle 3 years ago said in his book. We've been reading the quotes where we need to be like Europe, where old people know they have a duty to die.
The moment you give big government a say in allocating healthcare, big government also feels it suddenly has the right to tell you how you should live your life, how much you drink, how fatty your food is.
They're already saying $1,000 fines and jail time for salting your food in New York State, and I see them pushing similar things now in England.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We have this traffic light system now on our food in supermarkets, whereby, you know, red means dangerous, you know, amber means treat with caution, and green means go. It's safe and low in cholesterol and stuff. You know,
and they're setting the precedent to literally run your life and tax certain foods more. I mean, they're openly saying this.
Oh, absolutely. There was no question about it, because, you see, once government starts spending money, I mean, your money, let's not forget, when government starts spending your money on healthcare, it thinks that the best way of making the service cheaper and getting better value for money is not through the actual service it provides, but by spending a fortune on advertising and measures to forcing individual, for free individuals to behaving in a way that conforms with the government's idea of health. So, you know, abnormal behavior is not allowed anymore. You have to eat lettuce and live like a rabbit and not drink alcohol anymore and definitely not smoke, or you won't get, you know, the medical treatment that you've paid for.
And that's why they love to collectivize things, because then they get all of the rabble that's on the dole angry at not just people with more money than them with class warfare, but now they're not just angry about the plastic bags or your big car. Now they're looking at what you're ordering.
Yeah, and of course the other thing you get is I don't know how familiar you are with this, you're going to get lots of health tourism. I mean, the number of health tourists we get from the third world coming over here, sneaking into the system and, you know, getting treatment that they haven't paid for it costs the British Exchequer a lot of money. So our service goes down and down and down, and you have to wait longer and longer and longer for treatment.
By the way, I just pulled this article up. I have seen scores of cases in Kansas City, but also at Walter Reed in another part of the country. In fact, here's the Washington Post. Pentagon is probing veterans' home. The Government Accountability Office warned the Pentagon this week that residents of a home may be at risk in light of allegations of severe health care problems. Residents have been admitted to Walter Reed Army Medical Center with the most serious type of pressure sores, and in one case, this is one of many, with maggots in a wound. A bunch of vets have died from a special type of fly that goes up into the nose and lays eggs in the mucous membrane, and then they have a meal of your brain. So I guess we're getting screw worms now that we eradicated for cows, now feasting on the vets. The one place where the government does run the health care, and it's absolutely abhorrent.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is welcome to our world. This is what it's been like for the last 50 years in Britain.
How do they enforce it in England? They just take the tax money with other taxes? Because here they're saying the IRS is now going to be our nanny and basically run our lives.
Oh yeah, we have no choice. I mean, our tax burden has risen enormously in the last 12, 13 years under our socialist government, they have spent more and more of our money on this creaking health system, which has not improved one jot. So it's got more and more expensive. It's acquired more and more layers of management, particularly, so that you've got more and more bureaucrats for every hospital bed, and fewer actual nurses. So the system has got, you know, I mean, this is socialism in action. You get bureaucrats paid for at taxpayers' expense, and the system gets worse and worse and worse. And you have no say in the matter. You know, you can't complain about the service you get because, as I said, you are treated like a supplicant, not like a customer.
So you pay for it with tax money, but that's not good enough. And then third world populations pour in who are on the dole and don't even, in many cases, work, and it gets more and more bankrupt. Where is this headed in England so we can get an idea where it's headed here?
Our country is going the way of Greece. We have a massive structural deficit, running into billions of pounds, and our government has not faced up to the fact that it cannot afford to spend any more of taxpayers' money. I mean, already the public sector of the economy has now just overtaken the private sector, which means that, you know, for obvious reasons, if you've got ordinary, hardworking businessmen and people supporting more than 51% of the economy, you have a recipe for financial disaster. And this is what's happening now. We can't afford the NHS. We can't afford we can't afford anything, really. We are a nation of bureaucrats.